All right, thank you very much. I'm from the University of Illinois. We're on the Illinois-Wisconsin till plane, which is very flat, so when we want to find some relief, we go to the driftless area. Okay, so. And if you go to the driftless area, occasionally you'll see signs like this. It says Ice Cave, Iowa State Preservation System, which is makes you kind of wonder, you know, what exactly do we have an ice cave in Iowa? What's that all about? And I was asked to write the soils manual for the Illinois.
We're working on it.
Working on that. Okay. Never mind the beeping. It has nothing to do with the talk, right? The Illinois Master Naturalist Program, and in which case I wrote the soils chapter, but I looked at the ecology chapter, and there was a reference to algebraic slopes, and I lived in Illinois for 35 years and didn't know what it was, so I figured out what must be a research project there. If I don't know about it, no other soil scientists do. So here's the definition. Algebraic slopes are defined as cool microclimate ecosystems on north-facing colluvial slopes found sparingly across the driftless area of the Midwest and somewhat in West Virginia. They are basically refrigerating systems that cools these north-facing slopes. In theory, ice gets trapped in this is driftless, so that means the glaciers have never overridden it. It's a limestone landscape, so there's a lot of voids in the rocks, and they accumulate ice and snow in the winter, and that cools the slopes in resultant summertime. And these are north-facing slopes, and there is unique flora and fauna associated with these. And most of these sites have been looked at by ecologists. And I hope there's some ecologists in the crowd, and because I used to be an ecologist before I was a soil scientist. And we look at things, soil scientists look at things a little differently than ecologists sometimes. So I thought I'd look at it. And the important thing about the slopes from a federal point of view is they're listed as a site for the endangered species, which is the only known population of the Iowa Pleistocene snail. So when you think Pleistocene snail, you're thinking saber-toothed snail or woolly snail or something like that. There's more to the story. Yeah, I was in La Brea Tar Pits on Sunday for the Urban Soils Tour, and there's the megafauna from the Pleistocene in there. But for some reason the faunal record stops 10,000 years ago, and no one can explain that. But here in the driftless area, we have an animal that actually lived with the megafauna. Everybody know about the megafauna die-off, right? Okay. Anyway, so this animal is the Pleistocene snail, this saber-toothed snail, or the woolly snail, and it's in the driftless area. And so consequently, the federal government's protecting these driftless areas to keep the snail going. But from a soil science point of view, a couple things happened since I was a grad student. There's a couple of grad students in the audience. It's very easy to record soil temperature, soil moisture. It used to be really a pain. Now it's real easy. Decagon out, you can go downstairs and through Decagon, they gave us a little money to set up a lot of weather stations. So that made life much easier for us. And we're on the kind of on the north side of the mesic temperature regime. And I was thinking, boy, if we got colder temperatures and real close to the mesic frigid boundary, maybe these are frigid soils and we could make new soil series and things like that. The other thing is, from a global climate change point of view, these are refugia again. So this area, these driftless areas, these algebraic slopes from a global climate change point of view, they have escaped the Holocene warming, in a sense, because they never warmed up as much as the rest of the world because they stayed cold. If you remember, you know, the driftless area, the glaciers came from all different directions and missed the driftless area. So it sat there, and this Iowa Pleistocene snail just happily did about its snail business since 400,000 years ago when they're in the fossil record. So this is a diagram from the Forest Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, how it's supposed to work. There's your north-facing slope, and ice accumulates in fissures and voids in the limestone. And then during the summer, the cold air drainage comes out and cools everything down, and presumably cools the soils down somewhat as well. But again, the only research I know that's done on this is a couple of ecologists walk across with a pocket thermometer and they stick it in the soil and they say, yeah, it's colder. So we set up some weather stations on this. So again, a little more background. There was no direct glaciation in the driftless area. glaciers hit all the way around it, north, south, east, and west of the Driftless area. And this includes the northwest of Illinois, the northeast of Iowa, the southwest of Wisconsin, and the southeast of Minnesota. And again, it's the home of the only known home of the Iowa Pleistocene snail, which was known previously. It was discovered fairly recently in the 1950s, only known from the fossil record from 400,000 years ago. So it's a Pleistocene animal, it's just like a woolly mammoth or a saber-toothed cat. And that's the Driftless area there. Champaign-Urbana, where we're from, is down there somewhere. So it's a bit of a drive from us, but it's close enough that we could do field work there. I was lucky enough to go run across Lisa here, who's a Fish and Wildlife Service technician or whatever, naturalist, on an algific slope here. Very, very steep slope. We were hanging on for dear life, and she actually found a snail. And I asked if I could see it, and she said, "You can't touch it because it's endangered." So, so I did the next best thing. I went on the internet and found a picture. So this is Distichus McClintocki. There he is, trucking right along on the forest floor. And again, this is a little disappointing. Remember, this is a remnant of the megafauna, you know, the giant ground sloth, the mastodons, the saber-toothed cats, and it's all of 6 millimeters in diameter. So no saber tooth, no woolly, that's it. And you could easily miss, step, I probably stepped on a few. Anyway, so research objectives. Okay, let's see. We're going to inventory and map location of the published soils and vegetation characteristics of the algific ecosystem, the Driftless area. Of course, this is looking at soils at a little more close scale than the guys who map in forest soil scientists in the audience. You know, they paint with a broader brush than agricultural mapping guys do. So, and then we're going to look at the microclimate of these areas. We had to select a few. A lot of these are managed by local clubs and whatnot, and they're very protective about where they are because they don't want hunters to come and whatnot. So these are, it was a little touchy getting access to some of these sites. Actually, once I got a call from somebody, I wrote my name in all the weather stations I'll tell you about here in a minute, who said, "I'm out looking for Indian artifacts. I found your weather station. I was going to shoot it, but I decided to call you instead." That kind of thing. And then we're going to look at the local microclimate and look at the difference between south-facing slopes that are not algific and the ones that were algific. Again, algific means always cold, right? Supposedly. And then we're going to look at if the soil temperature regimes could be frigid instead of mesic or isomesic or isofrigid, and then come up with new soil series because everybody likes to name things. So materials and methods, of course, we had to select our sites. And we looked at the literature. There's not much written about these places. We had to get a lot of local contacts going. And so then we visited the areas and looked for cold air vents because they're really kind of spotty on the landscape. They're not as big and well-defined. There wasn't a big, really big contrast. I mean, there's supposed to be these northern species like fir trees grow there that are really not next found, you know, 200 miles to the north and things like that. And then we had to find sites that were relatively secluded so our equipment would not be messed with. Anyone who leaves equipment in the field, there's always a problem with vandalism stuff. And so we ended up with 4 pairs of algific and control sites. And these are basically along the Mississippi River there that's under the end is Illinois, above it Wisconsin, to the west of Wisconsin is Iowa, and then the upper left corner is Minnesota. So that's where our sites ended up. And so good old Google Earth can give you a good view of these things. And this is looking south, so you see the north-facing slope. So this is what we call Chase Creek as one of our sites. And it's a paired site where we've got algific and a control site. So we set up a weather station there. Similarly along this one, Asgard in Illinois, again, a south-facing slope right along the river. Another one in a state park in Iowa called Bixby. And here's one of the things we could see in the summertime on a hot summer day. I took hundreds and hundreds of photographs with my digital camera And as I was looking at the camera, they all disappeared. So this is one of the last photos that didn't disappear. This is actually the steam coming out of the side of a hill on a summer day. So there is, it's a real thing. The question is how important it is from a soil classification and things like that point of view. So that's cold air drainage out of a cave, one of those ice caves. So here's what we use. We put in hobo temperature loggers. We made soil descriptions, all that good stuff that anyone does. We took temperature at 10 and 50 centimeters down. We took air temperatures. We took PAR, photoactive radiation, precip, all that good stuff. There's our weather stations. We use Decagon weather stations. And again, temperature at two depths in the soil, shallow and one deep depth, and air temperature, and all that good stuff that you can do very easily now, which used to be very, very expensive and very difficult. So here's the grad student installing in a cave, a cold air vent. So we put some sensors in the vents themselves, but most of them went in the soil because we're looking at soil temperature. We already know that cold air comes out of these vents because you can hold your hand up and feel that coming out. And this is one that, just to show you what it's like, we in a cold air vent, locked in with a cable. And this is a completed weather station that has soil temperature, and that's the grad students down there. So again, 2 at 10, 1 at 50 centimeters deep, air temperature, humidity, all the good stuff you need. And we had a program in the field, of course. So here's a final installation at one of the sites. That's for scale. There's a 2-meter grad student down at the bottom there. And up there is the weather station. Look really closely. They make pretty good targets for anyone who has a sharp eye. And there's the cold air vent, just to get some numbers of what's coming out of the cold air vent. And just to get to a little data, we started this, we got behind schedule, and we started this a little later than we wanted to. And it turns out that the soils, these are 50 centimeter deep soil sample temperatures, and in yellow is the control, and in red is the algific, and as you can see, it's colder in the summer and warmer in the winter because of the cold air drainage, and although it's not spectacularly different, again, this is 50 centimeters in the soil. A different site, we get the same schedule, colder in the summer, warmer in the winter, but not, you know, knock your socks off difference. And the third site, my favorite one, is Chattahoochee. The name alone says it all. And again, cooler in the summer, warmer in the winter. And only 1 year's data, which is probably not enough. These stations, weather stations, are still going. And of course, batteries run out. You have to go in the middle of the winter. And that's a grad student doing his work in a cold winter. And unfortunately, our first year was one of the coldest winters on record in the Driftless area. So that's what we were up against. But it's not the winter temperature we're really interested in. It's the summer temperature. And so here's some of the folks who helped out with the research. And so this is an ongoing project, and this is kind of intermediate record of what we're doing. So that's it.